Welcome to the Course in Miracles. Welcome to the end of fear.
I'm down.
Okay. Welcome to the end of fear. Welcome to the end of fear. You've had fear in your life? Don't like how it feels, maybe. Welcome to the end of fear. You've had fear come in and steal time from you just to have nothing come of it. Had so much to worry about and so much didn't happen, even.
That's the cool part of life. Never happened.
Welcome to the end of fear. How many times so much that was inevitably going to happen did happen, but it wasn't as bad as you thought? Well, doesn't that mean it was never as bad as you thought? You were worrying about for nothing. Welcome to the end of fear. That's where we go. You know, there's this polarity that we read about in this book, love and fear, right? Well, he says there's only two emotions. There's only two possible ways for you to feel. The ego says you can feel a whole lot one way, and while holding on to that, feel a little bit the other way. That's what the ego says. But that's very fearful, see? Not true. Welcome to the end of fear. We actually have, in this book, in our studies, we actually have, from the designer of you, you who fear, that one, we actually have a plan, an exit door for you to leave fear, to actually turn it off. It's right here. You know it. You know it's here.
It says love is the opposite of fear.
Turns out, it says only love is.
Which means there's no fear.
Yeah, there's only love.
There's only love.
Fear is the imagined opposite.
Yeah. Turned up. Because you, lowercase y-o-u, want it. In fact, you, the lowercase y-o-u, need it. But if you're in this room, you're reading this book, some part of you says, yeah, I'm over that. Thank you. I'm over the fear, separation, limited to a body, ending at some point. And then that's all there is? I'm over that. There's something else. And I'm willing to start that something else right now. That's why I'm here. I've identified that there is something beyond the body, beyond this dream of separation. And it's present. Fear is evidence that you have gone into the dream, the laws of the world, and you're playing by them. Welcome to the end of fear. Because this book very confidently gives us permission to no longer follow the opposite of love, the laws of the world. Permission. Welcome to the end of fear. Course in Miracles says that when you pursue the laws of the world, fear, guilt, worry, separation, it says you're pursuing something that the author knows you don't want. Because the author knows you, with a capital Y-O-U, knows your heart. In your imagination, you've wandered away into some other substitute for love, and you've been busy following it. And you've wandered away from the flock. You're the lost sheep, see? The rest are having a great old time, eating up in the sun. They'll be back with water and shelter, and then out more food and care. You just got curious and wandered off, away from the flock, on your own. You have the power to do that. And Jesus is the sheep herder. And he loves you. He and you are each of each other. He's awoke. You've gone to sleep. And you're really fascinated with this fear thing, because it seems to be so powerful. I mean, it comes faster than love. Cool. Look what I can do. Not only can I feel fear, I can make him feel fear. Wow! He can make me feel fear. This is real! And this is a dream you're engaged in. And all the laws of the world support it. Harm, and guilt, and destructiveness. And one can take from another. You can lose something that's valuable, see? He gets it. Or, if he loses something of value, and you can prove that he's lost something, you could lose something of value. Next, you better try harder not to lose it. Look what happened to him. And there's the world. You should be afraid of having what happened to him happen to you. Isn't that the world? That's the dance. That's the dream. It's just a big game, which has rules and laws. They're the laws of the world. And if you didn't lift your head off of the ground and look at the horizon and the light just for a few moments, like we do when we come here, how would you know any different? You should be afraid right to your last breath, and then do it again. But try harder. How would you possibly know any different? This book explained to me why I can look at horrible situations and be in so much pain and strife, and yet there's a little spark that sees through it all. It says, but I'm still here. I'm untouched by that loss. Well, what's untouched by that loss? All right, so there's more going on here than just what can be added up and subtracted. But man, I need a guide. And the whole world is busy telling me that I should be afraid. And the better you get at being afraid, the better you avoid problems. But of course says, ha, no, not really. Welcome to the end of fear. You know what? I'm going to take you by the hand now. It's just time. If you're reading this book, it's time for you. I'll take you by the hand, and as much time as you think you need, I'll be here. And we'll just work with each thought that you have until you're giving me thoughts and I start listening to you, which will obviously happen. But until then, I temporarily have more than you, because this is Jesus talking. He wrote this book. He says, I've woken. He says, I saw through it. I'm going to write a book, and I'm going to put it in your language, and I'm going to put a bunch of workbook lessons in there so that you can actually follow it through hour by hour. so that you can undo the fear tonight. It keeps showing up and showing you darkness. And then, this is a tricky part, the fear proves that the dark thought you had was real. Because it hurt. Well, the world says feelings don't lie, right? What can you trust if you don't trust your feelings, says the world. Your feelings. Hey, that's attached to your heart. You got to trust your heart, says the world. Are you going to deny that real feeling that you're having for some flaky thought that fear and guilt and sin are a choice? No, you got to trust your feelings, says the world. And the ego's got you. And you'll get whichever you believe. But tonight, welcome to the end of fear. We're going to look at cutting loose that addiction to wrong-minded feelings. A wrong-minded feeling. So we better think about this a little before we get into it, huh? Let's get in touch, just for a few minutes. Let's think about what the heck is this four-letter F word. Fear. What is fear to you? False evidence appearing real? F-E-A-R? What is just to you now? Try to get personal, because this is how you can dig in to your beliefs that you hold that seem to pop up before you have a chance to choose them. It seems to have power over you. Let's look at it now. Let's bust the ego on fear. What is fear? Is there a feeling that goes along with fear? Does that tell you what is fear? What comes first? The thought of fear? Or the feeling of fear? Does that tell you what is fear? And finally, take the last couple of minutes. Just pick a word or a phrase that captures most of what you've been thinking about fear. Something that, some aspect, give me an aspect in your life, in your mind, of what fear is, so we get an insight. I think it's more of a nuisance in my life even than mosquitoes. What is this, David? What is fear? What's an aspect of fear?
Lacking.
Lacking?
Yeah. You're lacking something, or something from the past. You're worried about the future. Without that, it doesn't seem to be any use for fear.
It's all lacking.
Yeah.
Something's going to disappear.
Or you've got something you remembered from the past. So you feel like you're phased until you start looking at it, realize. To me, it's like, it seems to go away now, but...
There's something in the passing, the ability to
something. More, it's all made up crap.
More lack.
Yeah, and all made up.
From the previous lack.
Yep.
There could be more of it.
Yep. And it's leading back to this guy and this guy.
Yep.
How you forgot.
Yep, that's how you're operating.
I don't say that, but I don't know what the hell was I forgot that thing.
Yeah, because it hurt. Could hurt.
Yep.
Wow. Oh. Pam, what's an aspect, just something, aspect of fear?
What might happen?
Yeah.
It's just a big might.
Might?
Something that may or may not happen.
Yes.
Worry a bit.
Yeah. Like a worry?
Yeah.
That's fear. That's how fear works, isn't it?
Yeah.
Fear's not really something in the past, is it? If it's happening in the past, it's really something going to happen.
It's going to happen, yeah.
We don't actually fear in the present moment.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like people aren't scared of being dead, but they're scared of dying.
They're
like,
not afraid. Afraid of flying. They're afraid of crashing.
The ifs.
The flying's okay.
Mm-hmm.
If it would just stay that way. The if.
Yeah.
But it isn't right now, is it? It's not right now.
Yeah.
I'm worried now about something that that might happen.
Yeah.
So fear doesn't happen in the present.
And often that's the antidote for fear, to say, hold on a second, everything's fine.
Oh, like, sober up.
Yeah. Hold on. You know.
Yeah. Damn, how about that? Very good. Bridget, what's an aspect of fear?
Pain.
Pain! That's why it's so memorable!
But then when you said a thought, the loss of control came up.
But pain is huge! Look, we wouldn't be talking about fear if it didn't hurt.
And might not be afraid of dying if it wasn't painful, of the sickness, you know, cancer, painful.
Yeah.
You could just die from cancer without all the pain.
But what about all the people who love you that have to say goodbye and the whole, there's pain to them. It's a little painful to think about what they would go through. You know, that's what rips me up. I had a big accident when I was 18 years old. And I'll tell you, does it seem to matter what happened to me, even with the residual things in my body that I have to deal with from this massive accident? But when I talk to my family about it, I just fall apart. That they told each other, Andrew's in the hospital. Did you hear? What do you mean he's in the hospital? Yeah, he's paralyzed. What? They all had to go through that. That just tears me up.
Mm.
That pain.
Mm.
It's the pain of fear. That's right. Zoe, what's an aspect of fear?
The thing I came up with is a sense of being uneasy or on edge you know, waiting for the shoe to drop.
The anticipating
part.
It's coming. It's coming. I don't know exactly when, but it's coming.
Yeah, right.
And it's going to be painful.
Always.
Hilarious.
It's not here.
No, it's never here.
But it's coming.
Yes.
The anticipation. Right out of the present moment. Into the future. And the past will educate you on how bad it could be. If you're curious, get on the internet, look it up, and we'll see how bad it could be. How bad is your situation? Let's find out what happened to others. Whew, can really make that anticipation difficult. How much pain are we talking about? Yeah. Julie, what's an aspect of fear?
Well, I'm with David. What was really occurring to me is the a thought of the future as unpleasant, and often because of the past or based on the past. But also And I have this, just this action of it, because it really is that present moment. The realization that it is a thought in the present. Like I mm-hmm. just saw my perception zone in mm-hmm. in this present moment mm-hmm. on like a fear thought.
Yes.
So it is the present moment, and yet you're not in the present moment.
Very good.
Makes sense.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so what you've actually done cleverly... So cleverly, this is what time is, Julie. But you've just danced around. You've actually taken a thought about that hasn't happened yet, and you've made it happen. So we've had to categorize these things. And build up. A clock has 12 hours on the face of it. And they march one after the other. So what time is lunch regularly? Anybody? Lunch happens at?
12.
About 12. Yeah. So now we know. You can expect that.
Of course.
Yes. We're here past dinner thinking about lunch. So, but it's not lunchtime, but we're thinking about lunch. We just ask each other what you had for lunch today. And we have all... we start really bringing this picture of lunch in, which is not present. But, and yet we're having the discussion now about lunchtime. Now, though, you see the trick. This is the trick of time. This is the whole trick of time. And so we would be fantasizing, really. We'd be dreaming about something, anticipating something, dreaming about something that isn't here and now disappears into a fantasy. This, for this you need time. Yeah.
Yeah. But from a practical standpoint, that's like all people talk about. And what do you talk about if you're not talking about the past and the future? What are you talking about?
She just said that, and this is a mother of children who's traveled the world, and it's not like she's guessing. She just said that this time thing, when we talk about some other, is all that we do, all that we talk about. What did happen, and then what could happen. Yeah. I'll tell you what I heard on the radio that somebody else abbreviated. And that's what happened. You tell me, from your imagination, about what you heard me say, what could happen. And that would be our conversation. And that she says, that's all that happens here. And so right is she that even when you sit down in the kitchen past bedtime and you're having a very serious conversation with a loved one, it's about some other time than 11 p.m. in the kitchen, isn't it? It's gone right out of the present moment into time. We could have the same conversation with space. We just changed the words, but it's the same conversation. That is the world. That's the world where lack happens and how it happens, turns out. And it hurts, which is why we really should talk about it, because I don't want any more pain. Kenny, what's an aspect of time?
Fear.
Well, I like what she was saying, that the thought happens real fast and then tell a story on it that's not true, and then I feel bad, and then I got a good habit going. Feeling bad.
Uh-huh.
And then I can get another story and feel bad about that.
Get a story to fill in, yeah. So it all makes sense.
So I can feel bad.
So you can feel bad properly. Not like an insane man who's just picking out bad. Yeah. No, you have a reason to feel bad.
Yeah.
That's a pattern, isn't it? Isn't that how fear is lined up and ready to operate? Mm-hmm. We'll pick a story to fit it. Got the fear going, yeah. So why is this here? Oh, I know why. Yeah. Then you keep it going. That's right. But what comes first? What comes first? Everybody, the thought of fear or the feeling of fear?
The feeling.
No, the thought.
The thought.
He's my straight man.
It's not the feeling.
Anybody else?
I'd like to know why.
Anybody else going to go with feeling?
I have to say that most of the time I find out what my thoughts are because the feeling's there first.
Very good. Because the feeling's there first is when she decides to find out what her thoughts are. Interesting way to phrase it, huh? Anybody else want to say feelings come first?
I think the thought comes first.
Yeah.
I would say thought. It's a feeling you relate to your body, and the body don't count. Well, I think it's more like a thought.
If you're feeling fear, or something, if your car's about to hit you,
it's a thought.
You're going to feel fear. You're not thinking. You're going to feel fear, and you're going to do an automatic thing like jump out of the way. And then you're going to think about what just happened, and you're going to construct a narrative to explain it so you don't have to be afraid anymore.
Well,
it's an unconscious thought. And feeling, the awareness of a feeling makes it a conscious
thought. Mm-hmm. It's an unconscious thought. Not a feeling, but an unconscious thought. He says, and then the feeling forces you, if you're as aware as Luann and you care enough, to go look at the thoughts that made you think this was fearful.
It's usually more than a thought. Usually it's a belief.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Well, say sure. Well, it says unconscious thought, unconscious belief, whatever.
Yes,
he says that
it's a type of thought for me.
He says I wasn't trying to be afraid. John says you didn't try to get in a car accident.
You don't have time to think in that situation.
You didn't try to get afraid of getting in the accident. He says there was something happened first. Yeah. What about this thought coming first? Is that the instant instantly we say unconscious? Does that suddenly rub out? Are we victims now?
Because I get out of the way of this car, now, bam! Is it gonna hit me? Bam!
Actually, time slows down a lot. Like when I'm falling, like a cup of coffee's in the air, I feel like it's like a minute before I hit the ground.
Yeah.
But I don't know. For me, it's a thought. It's a thought. That's an interesting like scenario, right? Because there is a snap thing that happens that's like wired into our brains, right? The fight or flight kind of response, But for me, all that chemistry that happens that makes one react is, for me, it's primarily stimulated by thought. By a thought.
And may I just maybe make a distinction? A life or death coming at you at high speed versus, oh shit, I don't know what I'm doing with my life.
Yes.
Like not necessarily like a life or death fear, but like a psychological fear or just general anxiety or
it's true of my belief stuff. Your beliefs that you believe in. So you're not thinking then. What you've already thought.
Existential thing, am I gonna lose my job or not?
Right.
I mean that really slows it down. Okay.
Yeah.
No difference. That's a whole lot of thinking into whether or not you should be afraid.
Right.
Well wait a minute. Yeah. That layoff's not even happening in the California.
Who's gonna get elected in another year and a half? Like, you know, that's like not coming at you a million miles an hour.
Well, a year and a half, you don't have to be afraid today.
Right.
Still, that's a whole lot of thought. Now, the car accident, or your loved one says, hey, listen, before you go to sleep, we need to talk. I need to talk to you tonight.
Oh, boy. You say, uh-oh.
Well, that's real.
The boss says for the first time, "I need. Can you come into my office, please?"
Right.
So you've used an example with a car, though, because you said you get.
Yes, you did.
You said you get news that you have cancer.
Yeah.
And then you leave the doctor's office, uh-huh. and you're driving down the street, and a little boy like rolls a ball into the street, yep. and you slam on that brake without thinking.
Yep.
And in that moment, you do not have fear of the cancer at all because you came totally present. Right? Like you're yep. just.
Thank you.
So I don't know how that answers whether it's thought or.
Well, that just shows a very, very important passage that you are in control.
Immediately,
you are in control of your experience. Mm-hmm. You are not a victim.
And then you go to the present. There's no time in that instant because no time.
There's
so yeah. what can exist in not time?
The story of the cancer disappears during the breaking incident and steer around that kid and the ball. And does he have a dog? I want to miss it all. I don't want to kill anything today. That's more important than the cancer. Proving you are in control of your kingdom.
No other things. So just fear of hitting that kid. You don't have time for the dog and the ball.
But you don't even need the little... He's a little guru saying, you choose... I'm going to run in front of your car so that you can stop thinking about your cancer just for a few seconds. Here I go.
I fell through...
No, it's you. He didn't need the kid to do that. He demonstrates, and maybe with her story too, you demonstrate that you do choose. You actually do have full control to choose your feelings and your thoughts, which is the ball and the kid in the street and the cancer discussion we've had so many times. So in the power of your mind, yes. Yeah, this whole unconscious thing, we will talk about that maybe tonight. Maybe we will tonight.
Is there that separation, the physical and the one-mindedness?
What?
Of being one and then separate. So the spiritual aspect and the physical aspect of ourselves, that a thought comes, but we're already having that thought. Of one-mindedness? I don't know.
Okay. Yeah.
Her mind.
Well, okay. So
you said it, There I was, free, not thinking, mindedness on I'm free and I'm one. And then,
yeah,
and
the
then,
oneness
and then
of
I
all.
Perceive something. I perceive something, which I already know is a perception, but I perceive something and I decide because of that perception that but that I decide that is there's now an external threat under that circumstance. I was at peace, one with everything. Now I turn some kind of sensation, something's perception, into a threat, external threat. And I go, that's a habit, that's a pattern. But you know, I go, there really is no external threat for a couple of reasons. I'm creation of God. Secondly, there's nothing outside of me.
Stephen said the key word. Stephen said the key word.
How long can I ever get in front of your car?
Perception.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You don't perceive, you're not afraid. Conscious, subconscious, preconscious, doesn't matter if you didn't see it.
Yeah.
It didn't happen to you. Perception was missing. Even though it was such a close call. Didn't you see how close that car came to yours? No.
Yeah, right.
Whoa! It could have really. Oh my God! I didn't. Really?
I missed the whole thing.
Fine! Because you didn't perceive it. He slammed on his brakes because he saw it. He said, oh my God! And he freaked out. But Seth was like, hoity do. Try to stay for a drive. Perception busts the ego wide open. Yep. Did you know the beginning of chapter? Is it 28?
Sounds familiar.
Three word sentence. Perception makes projection. Oh, did I get it backwards?
No,
projection makes perception. Yeah. Projection makes perception. Keyword perception. For our fear discussion.
Well, projection is the key word.
Projection is. Then there's no perception without the projection. In truth.
That's right. That gets me a lot of times. I'll be sitting and someone all of a sudden gets up and they're just freaked out over something that happened, and I wasn't watching the news, but they saw something. They're just, you see all this anger and this stuff's going insane. And then you look, then all of a sudden I go, now that I'm doing all this stuff, I'm going, whoa. I'm like, they're really freaking angry as hell because they just happened to, luckily, you know, I'll go, well, what just would happen? What would happen if you didn't turn the TV off?
They told themselves a story.
Yeah, so huge, you know.
They saw something and they projected onto it a meaning, and they filled in with a story all the details that answers what they're feeling about it. I told you so many times we had this gun that showed up in here. It, in A Course in Miracles meeting, a real, were you here that night? The real gun.
Oh, no, I wasn't here that night.
Oh, did anybody still here that was here?
Mm-hmm.
Walt, were you here?
That was before my time.
They didn't make it.
I guess I got to stop telling this story. But it was a real gun. It, the only thing about it, it wasn't loaded. But other than that, there was a pistol that was in here. Our Course in Miracles meeting. So we put it right there in the middle of the carpet, and we used it for our meditation. Some people said, you got to get that out of here. That's used to kill people. I think I have to leave this meeting. I mean, that's dangerous. You can't have a gun. And other people saw it as, you know, an antique and you know, the projection onto that piece of metal may have never even had a bullet within 2 feet of it. It's just a piece of metal, far as we know. The projection made the perception, and the perception made the fear. Mm-hmm. Or in me, it wasn't fear. It was anticipation of how much can I sell it for on eBay in case I get it.
Maybe we should do that. You should bring one again. See everybody.
Somebody thought it was an antique. Maybe it weren't a lot.
So, I got a scary one to bring.
Yeah, I bet you do. So that's key.
That was a symbol to a lot of people, causing their perception.
Oh, it was great.
It
really exposed all of their private beliefs and faiths and all sorts of great stuff. It was packed into that piece of metal that was in the middle of the group.
So the attachments.
You bet. Beliefs, attachments.
Projection, and then there's the pattern. And then, because you know what? If I don't care about something, I don't get attached to it. I'm not get attached, care about it. Now I'm invested.
Now you're invested.
Now I'm going to get fear because I now have some attachment.
And your story.
The gun showed up. Oh, now I'm totally peaceful on the mountaintop. Put a gun in front of me, and I got a problem.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not immune from any of that. I'm the same as everybody else.
And now the story flows in.
To.
And if we interviewed you in that moment, you'd build a nice, tight story around how, why you believe what you believe, and why you're attached to this, and who in your life was hurt by a gun. Whoa! Maybe he's right. Wow.
Interesting thought experiment.
Isn't it? Mm-hmm. Isn't it? You've said so much already. Do you have something else to say about you?
I am one.
I mean, perception. That's what that's a big deal.
There's a safe route on that.
Well, you got something to talk to us about for you?
I was thinking about uncertainty.
Uncertainty. Uncertainty.
And also, but just from the talk, separation. Mm-hmm. Seeing something is different, or seeing a person is separate or different.
Bless you.
Is a
yeah.
There's tissues here.
Yeah. Oh. Sure. Okay, so you brought up something that's I never read anyplace else but in A Course in Miracles, and it just set me back. I had to meditate on it and say, whoa, that's true. Busting the ego, and it's this. Regarding fear. Are you afraid of what you don't know? Or are you afraid of what you know? Do you believe? Is it really uncertainty? Or are you certain, part of you is certain, that this is bad and it will hurt? Otherwise, where'd the power come from to even worry about it at all if you didn't know?
And it's an addiction because you can't stop that.
It's an addiction. Because it seems like you're about to know even more. Something valuable. To avoid the pain. Oh, yeah. We're going to bust the ego on this. Because it isn't really uncertainty. It's certainty right now that you should be afraid. And you must be afraid.
It's the certainty of the story I'm telling myself.
The faith.
Yeah.
It's actually faith. You don't really know, but you're taking the step as though it was going to happen. Yes.
And the feelings back it up.
There's that feeling thing.
That's the other, just, you know.
Yeah.
It's, you can really work yourself up.
You can work yourself up. The feelings are there, so it must be true. So says the ego.
The trust is gone.
And the ego says, I really didn't have a choice because I had an unconscious trigger that was pulled. There's the victim ego. Watch yourself on that. We'll talk about that tonight. We'll have to go there. Luann, what's the thing about fear?
So, I just read the chapter on page 325 and 326, the last two paragraphs, and it's all about what fear is about.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And it just triggered absolute feeling of truth in me.
Uh-huh.
And it's, fear is that we might lose the love that we crave.
Uh-huh.
For me.
Uh-huh.
And that means if I am who I, if I displayed myself as a God's child, for instance,
mm-hmm.
and loved like I want to,
mm-hmm.
then I might be rejected.
Uh-huh.
And if I'm rejected, then that feels like I've sacrificed a relationship, a love relationship, for trying to be something I'm not. So it's like I'm either going to lose because I'm something I'm not,
mm-hmm.
or I'm going to lose because I am what I am.
Back to what David said, you're going to lose.
Mm-hmm.
Lacking something valuable. Yes?
It's the certainty of that.
Yes. Yes! The certainty that you don't want to lose that. Well, Course in Miracles would have you know, you're square in the hands of the ego when you know what you don't want.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see the focus on what you don't want?
That's interesting. Page 366.
That's it. Page 366. It says the ego knows only what it does not want. It doesn't think about what it wants.
But I also realized while I was reading this and got that.
Yes.
That it was a belief.
Yes, a belief.
That it's a belief that isn't true.
A belief that if you're feeling something, feelings are evidence of your thoughts. We've said that already, haven't we?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Feelings prove that you're actually having not just beliefs, faith in something.
Yeah.
The apparent subconscious is just evidence of your faith. The apparent subconscious is simply evidence of your faith that that program is already running. You didn't think you had time to think about it. It thought itself. That's my subconscious. I was educated when I was a child to believe that. It just pops out here and there.
But most of the time, as far as physical fear, I don't have it. For instance, uh-huh. I had a huge growth in my stomach, and all my friends were saying, cancer, cancer, cancer. And I was mm-hmm. thinking, why would I want to think it's cancer?
Mm-hmm.
And it
mm-hmm.
wasn't.
Yeah.
And I fell through a ceiling one time, and I remember Julie said, it slows down. On the way down from the ceiling to the floor,
mm-hmm.
I thought, well, no matter what happens, I have to stay conscious so I can tell my kids if I need to go to the hospital or not. And that's what it, that's.
Yeah.
And I ended up on the floor with no hurt at all.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Flop to my back, no hurt.
Uh-huh.
Huge growth in my stomach came out. It wasn't malignant. And I just sometimes think our beliefs will lead to the worst of a situation.
And Walt, certainty comes in and starts to make you feel the pain that Bridget pointed out about the lack that David pointed out and the cascade of the ego's laws of the world will make you that way.
But on the other hand, for me,
mm-hmm.
if I'm realizing I'm in pain, and usually mm-hmm. when I'm afraid my heart pounds and my stomach hurts,
mm-hmm.
then if I go and find out what it is, I can release it.
Mm-hmm.
And the book's constantly saying, look at what it is.
Yeah.
It's causing you to be a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only thing I know how to do.
Yeah.
Just look at it and find out the deepest reason why that's a fearful thing.
That's one way to do it. You bet. You bet. Very kind.
Started with feelings.
Yeah. So it seems to start with the feeling.
For me.
But Stefan says, wait a minute, you don't have feelings of something either. You didn't see, and then if you even did see it, if you don't care about it, you still don't have feelings over it. Oh.
Well, you have a feeling of peace if you don't care about it.
There's other people who have had a hard relationship with their families. But until you perceive them or know about them, you don't actually feel it.
Well,
you're kind of busy with yours.
Well, when I realized that my fear mostly comes from not being able to obtain the love that I want, and that I was looking for it in the wrong way, anyway, it felt really good to come to that conclusion. That I wasn't.
As long as you take time to think about it, then you can feel it.
I can feel it, but I can also say I just know it's just a feeling. It's not the truth.
And then you'd have to sort out and give me a story about what it is you're feeling. Yeah. Cecily, mm-hmm. What's something about fear?
I'm not sure when you said that, what you were trying to tell
me. Oh, I know. We have a much longer conversation you and I have to have on that.
Okay. I hear fear in there.
Yeah.
Well, I want to know what it's about, that's for sure.
It's always good news. It's always good news.
It's always what?
Always good news.
Oh, yeah.
In the end, everything is good in the end. And if it's not good, it's not the end yet.
That's
yeah, that's it.
So it's always good.
It's true, though. No matter how bad it is, there's always something good
that's
that will
terrible.
Come up. Always.
Right in the bottom.
It's a fact.
What are you saying?
No matter what. I don't care. Don't look at me like that.
Cecily, what's something about fear?
So I really liked what Kenny said about telling ourselves a story. And I think that it leads back to, you know, the whole concept of thought. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, it's only real if we're thinking it, right? If we're not thinking it,
busted!
Then
your whole life! Your whole life is busted by what she just said!
Yeah, and what we think is just totally yeah. based on perception, you know? Like, if we put, like, an apple yeah. in the middle of the room,
yeah.
and there's, like, two people, and, like, maybe I'm doing some, like, vegetable cleanse, I'm like, oh, that thing's full of sugar, that's really bad, and someone else is like, that's a delicious-looking apple, I wish I had money enough to buy it. Like, it's the same object, and people can have different thoughts about it,
yeah.
and if one thought makes you feel bad, then you can just switch to a different thought about it, or stop thinking about it altogether.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
and it depends on how invested you are in it, and the more invested, the more personal it is, the more you are going to need a miracle for the things that really matter to stop thinking about it in a painful way. Anticipating the problems, you will need a miracle, because you've already got a subconscious or a belief, faith running that this is important to you and it's going to hurt. Cecily's pointing out, look, here's how everything works. I don't care how close it is to you. If you, when you perceive it and you think it, then you have it. Did you? Just your thoughts is your life, we say here so many times.
Yeah, because the guy next to me John can, you know, look at, like, my kid can walk mm-hmm. right down the street past him and he feels nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't even mm-hmm. know who she is, mm-hmm. has no reference. She walks by me and all these stories start going through mm-hmm. head. Same human, same two people looking.
Same 15 paces, right? She walks 15 paces. Yeah, by John, nothing happens.
I've done this at an airport. You can't seem to love that random stranger in the, like, airport. Like, I mean, you can, but you can't.
There's no story, right, Kenny?
Yeah.
There's no story!
I haven't done it.
Huh? If they have a donut,
you're like evoking Mario tonight.
A couple of donuts. Yeah.
I love you.
I noticed you have two donuts there.
Mario.
Hello. Total stranger with two donuts.
My beach has no sand.
Rejection makes perception.
But you know what, Joey? There's something in me that doesn't quite agree with that. From your point of view, I get it, but I can be with a bunch of strangers, and they're easier for me to just feel love for than it is for people I know sometimes.
They're not assholes yet.
I have this judgment thing going on a lot.
But you got to get to know them.
And I don't need to judge them.
Right. So I have the same experience when I volunteer with hospice. It's you come in with no baggage. The family, you know, the family has all these dynamics, and you can just walk in there and love them.
Love them all.
It's true, but I've stood in an airport and just like looked, and I thought, you know, how come I don't feel that about that mother the way I feel about my mother? Or, you know, it's just very...
Hey, listen, some people love short stories, and some people can only love a big, long tome that takes a long time to read and get into. Just the same discussion. Wow. Just the same discussion. Wow. Brother John, tell me, what's something about here?
Well, I like, I think Pam said worry. That's the main thing. And, it's how we deal with our perception. Projection makes perception.
Yeah.
We have to have rules for which to believe in.
Yeah.
So to protect the body.
Yeah.
Which, well, of course, we all think it's real. We're making it real that way.
Yeah.
And we all have similar ways of thinking to do that, and hence generally accepted fears. But the less you get away from believing that this is all actual reality and not an illusion, then the less fear you're going to fear.
Well, and you touched on an important aspect. Course in Miracles spends a lot of time pointing out.
The Course says love is the opposite of fear.
Yeah, and it also says that the only thing that lacks and that feels fear, and that the whole thing is centered around the hero of the dream of fear, is the body.
Right.
If you didn't have a body, you wouldn't be so worried about. If you knew about the unreality of the body,
right,
you wouldn't be so worried about it losing anything valuable. There's a big story that goes into the body.
When you're in fear, incidentally, this is kind of a corollary.
Yeah.
When you're in fear, you don't think very well. People, listen to me. What I do, I was in a car accident. I told myself a long time ago, don't forget to think through your fear immediately when you're in a dangerous car situation. I did that.
Yes.
It saved me.
Yes.
It saved me.
Yes.
I wanted to be very afraid, but I immediately clamped into it and said, no fear, think. And that's how I know feelings come first.
You think the feelings come first?
I wanted to be afraid.
That was proof that the feeling comes first.
To me, I mean, I wanted.
You made a choice.
We all would be afraid.
You made a choice.
I didn't get into it. I forced myself to think my way out of the situation, and believe me, I saved my ass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, I did these things too. Lots of very exciting stories.
You got to think.
But what turns out,
you don't think, you're through.
Well, my body's really threatened. And I've been really threatened several times. There wasn't fear. Mm-hmm. There was, oh no, I need to right away.
Mm.
Ditzcraft. Fear was such a... So
you thought that, though. I need to...
You bet. It was so obvious. There wasn't... Fear would be after.
Yeah.
Right now...
Action.
Yeah.
Present
to prevent falling all the way off.
Mm-hmm. Like falling for the roof, I had to think, what would happen if I just need to be careful about what I...
Or the car spinning around.
Yeah.
It's like need to turn hard left, and now hard right, and now hard left again. Three 360s I did. With a cliff on one side and a hill on the other. There's no time to be thinking of fear. No. It's like left, right, left, right. And don't hit the brakes. Right. Right? I just don't touch those bricks. I'm thinking about all this. Mm-hmm. I'm not afraid.
Faster than you can think about it.
That's right. That's right. Time slows way down.
Yeah.
And I can see the cliff and the hill. And I'm just doing all that math and turning. And
it also goes by really fast.
Yeah. Too. Now when it's... Yes.
Exactly what happens to me.
When it's not that urgent, and it's going to take 3 or 4 hours to play out, now fear and feelings and thoughts and second guessing and stories, then that.
Yeah. And isn't it true also that it really doesn't matter whether the feeling or the thought comes because they are tied together so closely?
Well, it matters. It matters actually quite exactly. Because
if feelings were actually anything real, you could actually have a discussion about it.
Yeah, but our thought's real.
I mean, and I'm saying that with respect to this, because I'm like not really perceiving this world because I'm kind of attached to this world and my body and this feeling thing, but thoughts are where it's at. And what there is besides thought, spirit, God, Christ, this whole feeling thing is something else. So I want to have respect for just myself and everybody in general, because what can I do? But that idea that there's some kind of feeling thing going on that actually can stand up to any thought. And the feelings are powerful, and I can like feelings, and feelings are really challenging. Like, now I'm pretty much like mostly a Vulcan in the realm of feelings. But that idea that, because things are so beautiful when people have those feelings of love and joy and kindness. These are feelings. And yet, what do they feel like? They don't feel like anything. They feel like a bright light. I forget all about my body. My body doesn't have a problem right now. And yet I can love feelings. I can love to connect with people. I rarely do I feel a physical sensation of anything. Mm-hmm. But I can get there. But it's
turns out, from the mind. It turns out those feelings are perceived also. The body presents them, and then you perceive them. It tells you a lot about feelings. And the feelings happen in the body. Even thoughts about feelings happen in the brain, trying to trigger the body to give me more of that feeling. Which is a physical cascade of something like
adrenaline
or dopamine, or hopefully you get some more serotonin going.
Yeah.
Or to blush, to feel.
Or I was an oxytocin. You know, in the first couple dates, that would be nice. Maybe it's this. Maybe this is going somewhere. Did you feel the chemistry? I felt the chemistry. The feeling is what I was looking for on those dates. Turns out. I was waiting for it to happen. I wanted to perceive it. I didn't want to feel the feeling of, this is a problem. Oh, I gotta check my watch real quick.
Fear.
Fear! Or it's not love, it must be fear. Horse draws a very clean line on that. It's either love or
murder.
Murder! Murder! He says, you know what? Murder.
Which is another word for attack.
Successful attack. Really successful attack.
My brother, we were talking about Trump the other day. My brother said, I'd like to murder him. And I said, but doesn't that feel bad? He said, no, it feels really good.
Well, what about the call for love? Call for love.
Yeah.
Prayer is a call for love. I read that somewhere.
Yeah. What about the call for love? Well, that's the translation when you got your right mind on.
Oh, that.
Yeah, that's the healing. Now you're back into the healing, you good Course in Miracles dude. If there's no fear, there must be. You have to translate it then to the call for love.
Oh, okay.
So yeah. Thank you.
So you want so to?
I just want love or murder. For, right? In
can you imagine? So he's going to call me for love, like Stephen. I'm unhappy. I want love. What a gift to go try to get love from me.
So this is important.
I'm gonna come up with it.
This
right?
Is
it. We need it.
What we've just seen here is what I've talked about a couple of times about different levels of teaching in the book. And Bridget here has gone past the dichotomy of love and fear as being two emotions. She says, you know, I've been in this book long enough. There's only one. Thank God. That's why she keeps reading, because it's starting to make more sense to her. And she's done with duality and chaos and having choices, one of which hurts a lot. The book says there is no choice that actually hurts. There's a dream of hurt, or there's the only one choice you've ever made, which is love. Or it's a call for love, but it's still love. And in the end, it's love. Every time. Thank God. Now I'm in. I'm back in. That's because the level you where you are. You've gone off the dichotomy area. But if you're still stuck with the pain in your gut and you are following it, then part of you is certainly in the dichotomy area where murder's going on. Of course, says, check out this namby-pamby, soft, psychological stuff. Look, it's either love, you know, that, or it's murder. It's destroying. Let's just go right at it so that we're clear on what we're feeling. And there's no neutral. Look at workbook page, around 30, maybe. I don't have this page number down. It's really close to 30.
Page
30
is on Determined to See?
Page 30 in the...
In the workbook.
In the workbook.
Oh, no, that's
it. It's actually 32.
Okay.
All right.
I'm still trying to get those turned down.
Page 32... I'm determined to see things differently. Paragraph 2, sentence 4. The degree of the emotion you experience does not matter. The degree of the emotion we were talking about that you experience doesn't matter. That's A Course in Miracles, right? There's no order of difficulty in miracles. The degree of emotion does not matter. And you become increasingly aware that a slight twinge of annoyance is nothing but a veil drawn over intense fury. That does make things simpler. It makes them a lot more volatile, and it makes you more responsible now for even the little things. But I'm telling you, the big ones are easier to handle. It's those little thoughts that are cementing in your beliefs and your fears and your doubts. The little thoughts.
The ones you can't quite notice or quite can't figure out what the hell they really were.
Or you don't even think they're important.
Yeah,
so you just let them go and you tell a story to fit. And you say, well, that's okay, it's just a small little... No, oh my God, you are building your, what will be called the subconscious very soon. You are building your faith with the little things about what happens. And those are bad.
These thoughts are correlating into beliefs.
Yeah. They are correlating into a whole thought system.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes people flip out and go shoot people when they...
The little things matter. Now, the little things matter. Before Course in Miracles, the big things matter. Because you were getting yourself in a lot of trouble, destroying relationships, losing jobs, etc., etc. But now, when you start to tame your world, and you start to put this drug down, now it's the little things.
And for me, behind even the little things, there's fury.
That's what this is saying.
Yeah.
Even the slight twinge of annoyance is nothing more than a veil drawn over intense fury.
Like a Band-Aid or something.
Yeah. It's like a cork.
If you take the Band-Aid off, the blood splurts.
That's right. Band-Aid on an artery. Yeah. A cork in a volcano.
That's why I like to go as deep as I can about what's causing those fears, because then I can get down to, it doesn't really matter. It's not something I need to bleed anymore.
Yeah. Just for kicks, okay? Because this is fun. page 35 in the front of the book, in the text. Go to the front. And this is where it's only chapter 2, and you're trying to sort out Course in Miracles. You wonder, what's this book trying to say? What am I getting myself into? This is page 35 in the front of the book, paragraph 5.
There you go, bro. Thank you.
Sentence 4. What is that, Pam? What does that say?
No one who lives in fear is really alive.
Period.
Whoa.
Can you just ignore that sentence and just keep reading?
Wow. Well, I might figure that out.
What?
Page 35.
Page 35.
Which sentence?
Paragraph 5, sentence 4. Right in the front of the book. I mean, you're just getting started with your wonderful, lovely Course in Miracles book that's going to teach you all about miracles and love and happiness. What does it say, Pam?
No one who lives in fear is really alive.
Wow. What does that say about life?
Well, I've had some sad feelings about that recently.
Kind of the book kind of says that all through it in a way. The only true reality is not fear.
It turns out that if you're not thinking love, you're thinking murder.
Yeah.
You're destroying something. And we're really on the edge of this fear discussion to finding out, are you being destroyed or are you destroying?
Or do you need to destroy?
Who's doing it, folks? If you had some bad thoughts that went to your heart and made you cry, made you worry, is that coming from the outside? It's very important that you actually spend time and unravel how you were feeling before you found out. Before you had this triggered thought, were you busy last week with this problem? No, it hadn't happened yet, Andrew. I was just fine. And you can see, you can unravel that there's a perception that happened about something over which you are personally invested. And you start to think the lack and how this is going to hurt. And you started to worry about this perception you had over something that was important to you. And this sentence says you stepped away from life in that moment. You actually chose death. And that's what death feels like. Yes.
Because it is separation. Because there's only ever, it's somewhere in here, there's only ever one problem.
Mm-hmm.
There's only ever one problem.
Yep.
And if there's no order of difficulty and grievances, mm-hmm. then whether it's the death of a loved one or the death of a bug on the windshield, it's what you decide it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's what you decide it is. And if you take issue with it, it's in that moment there's a perceived separation. That's the sin of not trusting in the flow of
not trusting. Another not trusting. Huge word that didn't come out on fear. It is the trust. And so you're not trusting in something that would hold that situation and you in it.
Well, see, for me, the tears were interesting for me in a different aspect. Well, that's probably not making sense. But I had a situation with my son this past week. Darn it, I really felt compassion for him because I could see him suffering by just the way he was acting and what he was saying. And so the tears came up because I felt like I couldn't do anything to change that and for him. But I what came up for me was the fact that I was happy that I could see him differently than before.
Beautiful.
Because when he gets angry and upset, you know, the pattern for me is I usually get scared and I want to control him. And this time I just watched him and felt my feelings come up. But I also realized, you know, what I said, oh, I figured that out last week. It was as I was watching him, and I had a thought about, I want you to live and be happy and peaceful, you know, not so afraid.
Yes. Beautiful words. That, you are his mother.
Yes. Yeah.
This is a parent. And the Course in Miracles says is really useful, this whole parent-child relationship that you've come up with in this world, because there's a direct connection to love there.
Yeah.
And think you felt that on some level.
And think you that your parent, and now we're talking about God, and now that you being extension to God, would love you less. No. Would love you at least as much as you love your boy, maybe even more. That's this really great analogy to understand when you feel a mother's love and you feel a devotion to what you want. And when I imagine God having all the power and awareness and direction for taking care of you, now trust comes in. You would really have to have, you'd have to get off of the ego's story and laws to feel that trust, and you will. And it's a beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. It's part of your enlightenment.
Wow.
Good. You step back and you looked at it differently.
Yeah.
Good. Good. Okay. Jump to page 434. Paragraph 2. And we're talking about the heralds of eternity. The calls to eternity. Eternity means there is no time. You take away some of these limits like time, suddenly that changes the whole equation.
What page is that?
434. Or if you take away the body, for example, and yet you still witness it, it's just so different if your body can't actually feel. It will never hurt again. Somehow pain was taken away. Wouldn't be so fearful that you didn't have any needs here. What if you didn't have any needs here? What if the world had nothing to offer you that you wanted or that you needed? Then you could just cruise through and have a blast, right? Or just leave it, keep it fun. Wouldn't it matter? Your investment in this world will change as you heal your mind and you heal the world for meeting your investment as someone who can lose. The whole equation just flips 180 degrees. Anyway, that's all the good news, where we're heading. Okay. Bridget, would you read for us paragraph 2?
Each herald of eternity sings of the end of sin and fear. Each speaks in time of what is far beyond it. Two voices raised together call to the hearts of everyone to let them beat as one. And in that single heartbeat is the unity of love proclaimed and given welcome. Peace to your holy relationship, which has the power to hold the unity of the Son of God together. You give to your brother for everyone, and in your gift is everyone made glad. Forget not who has given you the gifts you give, and through your not forgetting this, will you remember who gave the gifts to him to give to you.
So there's a beautiful divine circle being painted in those last few sentences. It relates back to Zoe. Each herald of eternity, that means reaching beyond time, each holy instant, each moment when you step out of the judgment, for example, when you see without fear, sings of the end of sin, separation, and fear, loss. Each speaks in time now, in time where it's needed, of what is far beyond time. Wow, yeah, that's the kind of drug we want. The thoughts that go beyond the limits. Two voices now, raised together, call to the hearts of everyone. And those early workbook lessons that say, I'm not alone in the effects of my thought, I'm not alone in the effects of my seeing, it relates back to this, that it is everyone because it's one mind. As you heal the mind, the separated mind heals. It's a great equation and really gives you something important.
So you're doing your part by being a good course student.
You're doing your part. Mm-hmm. And you're heart is leading the way now. It really is so important. Yes.
That's cool.
Yes. It's beautiful. And in that single heartbeat is the unity of love proclaimed and given welcome, because that's how it feels. Peace to your holy relationship, which, by the way, has the power to hold the unity of the Son of God together. See, you give to your brother in this holy relationship. It's a leap of faith.
Feed the circuit.
Yeah. For everyone. And in your gift is everyone made glad. He's just hitting the same nail again with the hammer. He says, this is so important. Well, what? How does that work? I don't see that happening. I'm just struggling in my own little relationship. Well, he says, well, forget not. It means don't forget. Who has given you the gifts that you're giving in these kind thoughts of unity you're having? Where do those come from? And through your not forgetting this, will you remember who gave the gifts to him to give to you? In other words, the right mind in you is the one that unites the situation and lets the fear go. Sees the one that sees the healthy thinking in your son. Sees that you want the love to prevail and that he can. And the heart in you is bursting forth. This concentration of thought versus the fear of how bad it can be brings the love back to the situation. This is your right-minded thinking about that dream, that situation. Right-minded thinking, the call to love. Well, that's right-minded thinking about the world. Where did that come from? And that's what we call God. God is. Love is. And were there to be any discussion of real love in this world, it would not be because of the world. Where the discussion is actually murder. at best calling for love. Yep, yep. What a great learning ground. Once you turn the corner and see that now we can actually start answering that call to love and seeing that really love is all there is. There aren't two anymore. Congratulations. It's true. That's the good news. Zoe, would you read for us paragraph 3?
On 434?
Yes, please.
It is impossible to overestimate your brother's value. Only the ego does this. But all it means is that it wants the other for itself, and therefore values him too little. What is inestimable clearly cannot be evaluated. Do you recognize the fear that rises from the meaningless attempt to judge what lies so far beyond your judgment you cannot even see it? Judge not what is invisible to you, or you will never see it, but wait in patience for its coming. It will be given you to see your brother's worth when all you want for him is peace. Mm-hmm. And I said that to my son. And what you want for him, you will receive.
Yeah. Yeah. That's just for exactly what you were talking about. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just like that. And now, as much as we wouldn't want that situation to be duplicated and happen to anybody else, it is a gift for you and him. Well, hi, Kitty. Should we have the cat in here for 10 minutes? He finds his way out.
Bridget. Cat wrangler. Yes. Oh, no, it's Bridget.
Bridget's a cat lady.
Cat whisperer. Oh,
no, I'm not
going to
get out of something.
Yeah, now he's
going to
not
want to
go.
These all go together. Let's read, Julie, read the next paragraph, too.
How can you estimate the worth of him who offers peace to you? What would you want except his offering? His worth has been established by his father, and you will recognize it as you receive his father's gift through him. What is in him will shine so brightly in your grateful vision that you will merely love him and be glad. You will not think to judge him, for you would see the face of Christ and yet insist... Sorry, question. Who would see the face of Christ and yet insist that judgment still has meaning? For this insistence is of those who do not see. Vision or judgment is your choice, but never both of these.
So there's the binary experience. Vision or judgment is your choice. And when we read earlier, or you know, that lesson, are you determined to see things differently? Means you must be willing to go away from the judgment that says this is wrong and should never happen. And it's something to worry about. Somehow, some way, this crazy world will present you with things that seem permanently bad. And yet, there is this light that's in that situation, or Zoe's situation, or whatever crappy situation you have in your life, right there, if you just take a moment, say, Holy Spirit, show me what's this for. Show me this differently. Not a light out there, a light in you gets sparked. And this paragraph touches on that. You're like, whoa, wouldn't want the wish this on anybody, but I'm really glad I saw that. Because it's part of your awakening. It's part of your healing. Yeah. Let's do another one. Kenny, you up for paragraph 5?
Okay. Your brother's body is as little use to you as it is to him when it is used only as the Holy Spirit teaches. It has no function, for minds need not the holy
the body
to communicate. The sight that sees the body has no use, which serves the purpose of the holy relationship. And while you look upon your brother thus, the means and the end have not been brought in line. Why should it take so many holy instances to let this be accomplished when one would do? There is but one. The little breath of eternity that runs through time like golden light is all the same. Nothing before it, nothing afterwards.
So, okay. This is just illustrating the fact that it's a inside job and it's a mind job. That your awakening is spiritual, not physical. Your holy relationship happens in your understanding, not in your world.
Through vision, if you can see the little cracks in the outside in the universe.
Yes.
Letting in light, an eternal light.
Yes.
And it's at any time, it's always the same because there is no time outside the universe. It's to be known.
So it turns out there is this eternity, this eternal wakened state called spirit. And there is this temporal dream of bodies and brothers and mothers and sons and daughters and lovers and exes and double X's and triple X's that make up a world that would deny the awareness of this holiness. Of your holiness. The holy relationship becomes an opportunity for you, in concert with another, if you so choose, to become aware of your holiness instead of your dividedness, to celebrate the power of life instead of death, of love instead of murder. It becomes that if you take a moment to have vision. Cecily.
So, all night I've been thinking about separation and, you know, in relationship to this, it's like the whole thing we're talking about telling ourselves stories, seems such a way that we separate ourselves, because we identify our separate selves with these stories, and they can either be positive stories, like I'm a smart, successful business person, and I'm in good shape, and I exercise, and I visit my parents regularly, and blah blah blah, or it can be, you know, fear thoughts, like, oh, I have it so bad, and my landlord's always after me, and I can never make my rent on time, and I struggle with depression. All these stories, good or bad, like, kind of define us. And so we go to these stories all the time to give ourselves, like, identity. And if we... But it separates us from you know, oneness. And to go to oneness means to give up these stories, which is to like give up kind of like everything we know about ourselves. Mm-hmm.
It seems like a very high cost to give up everything we know about ourselves. And the Course says, well, it's not just that, it's everything you believe.
Everything you
believe? Why would I do that? Because the payoff is not just oneness, it's also joy. You get joy. Here, you get misery.
Yep.
Here, chasing joy, trying to find love and happiness in a world that's actually designed for failure. It's designed with limits and failure and vulnerability. He says, chasing for that, you won't find it. So if you're willing to wake up from this dream, you will find out. You will take the journey without distance.
You are the thing you seek.
You are the thing you seek. And always have that.
And I feel like a way to start down that path is to be aware that those stories are, you know, a segue to separation, and to try to let go of the stories. And that I'm kind of like aware of that right now, but what is hard for me to understand is what, if anything, you replace it with.
Yes. That's right. Honestly, that's right. So the focus first is to know what to not do. And you're right on it. Be certain in that and actually do it. Drop the stories and be willing to have no story. Just witness a situation common with no story.
Or judgment.
Or judgment or any other negative thought. Yeah. You'll know you're contracted when you feel the fear. Stop that. Stop that. The Course says, that's your part. Your part is the undoing. The part that you would like to do, or what you would replace it with, it happens automatically. Right thinking is already teed up. Love happens, CC, turns out. The love that you want, the love that you want, love it. Love happens in the present. And all the things that you would replace it with or do would be the ego going off into some other time with plans. It turns out the genuine self you to have is automatic. The genuine you
to know.
Happens immediately.
Thank you. That was a direct answer.
Okay, once. That was a direct answer. I got to keep her coming back.
But the way I would say, and I hope I'm right this time, is that who I am is hidden under my stories.
Yeah, that's right. Hidden. Behind a veil of your stories. Yeah, yeah. Well, to close the meeting, let's
just... It's the Holy Spirit and God, the Word, and all the God and Jesus and all, and stuck in there if I only believed it.
That's right.
Yeah, that I'm good.
And it turns out you don't even have to believe it.
Yeah.
You just have to stop believing the ego.
Yeah.
Stop believing the worry, the hate, the loss, the wrongness, and the guilt. Yeah. If you stop believing those, you don't have to forget them. Mm-hmm. Just stop for a moment.
Yeah.
And see what shows up in that moment. Mm. And if you don't find some heart opening coming present in the easiest breaths you've ever taken with what's called the holy instant, if you don't find that, and if you don't like that, then all your misery is instantly refunded. All the stuff you worried about, you can keep worrying about it. But the Course says, if you just go still an instant, you can go home to the present moment. But it means you do just not do. It doesn't mean you have to specially think anything. No, just stop thinking all that darkness. Just a second.
If you can't think anything nice, don't think anything.
Don't think anything at all. That's nice. That's it. Mm-hmm. should we take a minute to look at this? We're kind of past time. It's just a nice couple paragraphs to close the meeting with. Look at page 58 in the workbook.
I'm on my way to the airport. I love you all.
Okay.
Bye.
Thanks.
Bye.
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 Thank you. Bye. Thank you. It's a pickup. I was even going to.
Bye.
Where are we headed?
We're on page 58 in the workbook. Okay. Walt, you to read for us? Paragraph 1.
On 58.
Page 58. The bottom of the page says 58 mm-hmm. in the workbook.
There's nothing my holiness cannot do. Your holiness reverses all the laws of the world. It is beyond every restriction of time, space, distance, and limits of any kind. Your holiness is totally unlimited in its power because it establishes you as a son of God, at one with the mind of his creator.
Luann, number 2.
Through your holiness, the power of God is made manifest. Through your holiness, the power of God is made available. And there is nothing the power of God cannot do. Your holiness, then, can remove all pain, can end all sorrow, and can solve all problems. It can do so in connection with yourself and with anyone else. It is equal in its power to help anyone because it is equal in its power to save anyone.
Anyone. Your holiness, Zoe, has the power to save anyone. Oh, that's good news. Let's read one more. Listen.
If you are holy, so is everything God created. You are holy because all things He created are holy. And all things He created are holy because you are. In today's exercises, we will apply the power of your holiness to all problems, difficulties, or suffering in any form that you happen to think of in yourself or in someone else. We will make no distinctions because there are no distinctions.
Because there are no distinctions! So we'll make none. And it's really good for you to make no distinctions when we talk about holiness. Let's have a circle. You will get fear thoughts when you think of them.
Jesus, I don't know about them.
It doesn't make them real except for you. Now, because you're thinking it's real for you. See how powerful you are? See how powerful you are? See how powerful you are? You can also not think fear thoughts, even in what would be a fearful situation. You would remember how many times you got through worse. You would remember how many times that you got through anyway. Even if it was worse than you thought, you still got through. And here you are today, worrying about something else. Something new. Oh, come on. The Course says, seek no further than your own thoughts. It turns out that you get what you think. So no more fear, okay? Fear's always about something that hasn't happened yet. Fear's a fantasy. You think you know something about the future. And you're afraid. Just get present. This is what you do know. And even that you're kind of making up, aren't you? Don't take life so seriously. It goes better. Thank you. Thank you. Amen. Thank you.